Well, I've got good news, and I've got bad news. The good news is you guys get a break from Elliot for a week. He's still on vacation. The bad news is I'm the only one they could find to replace him. So I'd like to take this time to announce that the two nearest exits are back here and over here. In recent weeks, Elliot has been talking about forgiveness. More recently, he's talked about gossip. So I figured, just to keep in line with the easy lessons, since we've already mastered those, why not start with loving your enemies, right? Love your enemies. A phrase no doubt we've heard if you've grown up in church. Turn the other cheek might be a phrase that of choice that we might recall learning to love our enemies. Sometimes we as Christians, we can give ourselves a pass on this one. Well, you don't know what they've done, or there are enemies that are bad enough that surely even God couldn't like this person. But that's not what he teaches us. Sometimes we want to sit back and we think, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, and we've got our popcorn ready and we're just waiting for that vengeance to come. But who, how, when, and why we love is what defines us as children of God. The Bible calls us to love our enemies. Some might wonder, well, who is my enemy? What I like about this time of year is we're seeing the seasons getting closer to change. School starts. There are a few things that happen. The ball gets rolling. We know colder weather is coming, but one of the main factors in that is that football has started, right? So we've already had a couple of weeks. Those who were having withdrawals, we can all rest easy. We're good. We've seen a few games, and so we're good. This might make you think of who is my enemy. Now, I don't want any fights to erupt. Don't start naming off who you think it is. I'm not even here to tell you that Gundy is the enemy. I will let you come to that conclusion on your own. But studying about loving your enemy, I even this week learned to take baby steps. I took my first baby step towards loving my enemy. And I went to an OSU game yesterday. What is this like? If I was surrounded by so much orange, it was a little bit too difficult to take in. So much orange, my dad had an extra ticket. I went with my dad and my brother, and he kindly offered his shirt to me. If you want to know, I don't know if you can practice what you preach. That picture right there, at least for yesterday. Now, I may have taken it off immediately after this picture, but I took a picture wearing orange nonetheless. So who is my enemy? You know, often we think of commands that God gives us. Honor your father and mother. Oh, that's easy. You know, especially if you had good parents that raised you. Don't steal. Don't lie. Don't commit murder. We think, I'm even good with all of those, but that love your enemies, you just don't know what this person did to me. And I know that we went through forgiveness. That is one step of loving them, forgiving them for what they did. It's easier to forgive them when we think about how much God has forgiven us. So this morning I want to look at ways that we are called to love our enemy as Christians. This morning we're going to look at the book of Luke. His recount of the Sermon on the Mount. He's gone through the Beatitudes. Also in Matthew chapter 5, we've got the famous sayings, "You have heard what I say." And as I was listing off things that we might think that we're good at or we don't have issues with, "Thou shalt not commit murder." Well, one of the famous, "You have heard, I say," "You have heard, don't commit murder. I say, if you hate your brother, you've committed murder in your heart." This morning, Luke chapter 6, verses 27 and 28 says, "But I say to you who listen, love your enemies, do what is good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, and pray for those who mistreat you." So we see here it's listed three things, three ways an enemy might act. The first one is somebody that mistreats you. I look back to an Old Testament prophet in Jeremiah chapter 29 specifically. He's writing to the Israelite captives in Babylon. You think, who might mistreat me? Well, if somebody comes into Sand Springs and takes us all away and takes away everything we know, destroys this building where we worship, makes us do what they want, we're slaves to them, some of them even get their names changed, I would say that would qualify as being mistreated. But it's interesting, so someone mistreats us, but the Bible says that we need to pray for them. And it's difficult even to start a prayer life, especially if you're a new Christian, learning to talk and learning to have that relationship with God, bringing your cares to Him first instead of just when something bad happens. Now, when something bad happens, we do find ourselves more apt to pray. But if something was bad, like this scenario, we probably wouldn't be praying for the people who took us captive. But we look, our text is in Jeremiah chapter 29 and verse 7. It says, "Seek the welfare of the city where I've sent you into exile, and pray to the Lord on its behalf, for in its welfare you will have welfare." Other versions say, "Where they thrive, you thrive. Where they prosper, you will prosper." This seems very different than our first reaction. You know, one could maybe even imagine that they might recall the account of Jericho. Surely this letter is going to come in, we're going to read this, and we got to, you know, play some instruments, make some loud noise or something, and we're going to take over. You know, we're going to make our way back to our home. But that's not what it said. It said to pray for them. No doubt they were considering them enemies. I also recall another Old Testament prophet in Jonah. I'm sure we all can remember the story of Jonah. He is told to go to the Ninevites and tell them of the impending destruction because of their wicked ways. First, he's scared. He disobeys God. He tries to run, tries to go to Tarshish. The seas rage. He's thrown from the ship, swallowed by a big fish, stays in there for 3 days. He's spit out on shore. And he ends up going to Nineveh. And he's telling them, this is what is going to happen to you. Walks into the city. In 40 days, destruction will come upon you. Sits back. As I mentioned earlier, we have that human nature, even back then, to sit back and wait for this destruction to come. These are my enemies. They are enemies of God. This is what they are finally going to get, what they deserve. And as he sits there, and as God even grows up a shade tree over him and realizes the city is not being destroyed, why aren't they getting what they deserve? The text from Jonah chapter 4, verse 11, the last verse in the book, says, "Should I not have compassion on Nineveh, the great city in which there are more than 120,000 persons who do not know the difference between their right and left hand, as well as many animals?" The world doesn't know the difference. The world says, do unto others as they treat you. Not as we would read later on in Luke, that do unto others as you want them to do to you. And that's not just a one time. I've recalled that as I was even younger. I won't say as I was a child, I'm not that old now. But so I would recall times when I would think, do unto them as I want them to do to me. And I do that one time, and then they treat me bad after that. I'm thinking, well, I did it. I did my one time. That's it. I'm not treating them again. They're obviously not going to reciprocate, so I'm going to treat them the way they are treating me. It's human nature. But this is not a friendly suggestion to love your enemy. It doesn't only apply to those, we all know those people that are hospitable, very loving, they love talking, extroverted, they love relationships. This doesn't apply to those. This applies to Christians, all those who follow God. You might remember from a couple of years ago, our theme was living transformed. This verse may look familiar to you. Romans chapter 12 and verse 2 says, "Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will." We want to do what the world says is easy, what the world does. We want to treat them the way they treat us. But God calls us to live differently. So going back to our main text for today, the next one, next characteristic of what an enemy might be is someone who curses you. And what does the Bible tell us to do? It says to bless those who curse you. That's kind of difficult. It's one thing if someone is mistreating you, but if somebody is cursing you, what draws the thoughts are from social media. Right now, social media is very huge. You know, your preference may be the face page, maybe whatever, but you have things you look at, people you watch, people you follow, and our words are powerful. Sometimes those words, especially on social media, because people are hiding behind a screen, they might feel more empowered, there aren't any immediate consequences, they have rights to free speech. But when someone says something bad about us or to us, we want to defend ourselves at minimum. And that's just the minimum response. So I'm going to get up there, I'm going to tell everyone else, defend myself. But then we usually want to go one step further. Well, if you want to say that about me, I know X, Y, and Z about you, and you think that was a long Facebook post, I can put a long post out there. And I'm going to put it vague, but it's specifically vague. So hopefully you'll know that I'm writing it about you. We want our form of justice for how we've been treated, for how they've acted towards us, for the things that they have said. I don't know if you all know any of the recent arguments over in the internet about two different chicken joints and their sandwiches. You may have seen one or two things on said social media face pages, but one that has had a very, very good chicken sandwich for a long time. Had no issues, and then another company decides they're going to try their hand at chicken sandwiches. And then there became sides. Similar to the slide earlier, you've got different college teams that you root for, you get sides. Then you had people warring against others just because they picked a side. You know, our enemy could be someone that we don't even know, we haven't met. It's just they're on the other side and I'm on this side. Now, this is also not going to get into a debate similar to the college groups. We're not going to get a debate on whose sandwich is better. I will say, though, that one of those establishments closes on Sundays for a particular reason, and that's all I'm going to say about that. There's a lot of wisdom in the Bible about the words that we use and how powerful words are. Especially in Proverbs, it's mentioned multiple times about how powerful the mouth is, specifically the tongue. We read in Proverbs chapter 18, verse 21, that the tongue has the power of life and death, and those who love it will eat its fruit. We also have the famous passage in James, verses 8 through 10. But no human being can tame the tongue. So just prior to this, the author states that the tongue is kind of like, it describes it like a rudder on a ship. A giant ship is controlled by a tiny rudder. Or a forest fire is started by a tiny spark. The power of our tongue is strong. Verse 8, but no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison. With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. Have you ever heard the expression you might hear, especially those who've been in chemical or manufacturing jobs or what have you, but you might have heard the expression around some who may choose to use foul language, do you kiss your mother with that mouth? I've heard that a few different times, and not to me, but I've heard other people say it. That's sounded bad there. So I've heard it said, and this is the idea is that how can something so foul come out of something that you're going to kiss a mother that's so sweet? Often I wonder if we ask the right question, that how can our praises, how good do they sound to God when out of our mouth on Sunday morning we praise Him, but throughout the rest of the week we curse our brothers and sisters? So not only are we called to love our enemies, but we need to understand how powerful our own words are. Blessings don't come by accident. You know, I was reading this, and the more I pondered on it, how fitting it was that we think we're called to bless those that curse you. A blessing is such a good thing. We think of all the blessings that we have. We've been blessed. The people that we help with the furniture distribution, they say, oh, you guys have no idea what a blessing this is. They didn't just happen to stroll by and we just happen to have furniture that they just happened to request. Those things were purposeful. There was intent behind it. Blessings, when we are called to bless others, we're not just going to accidentally walk by somebody and do something nice for them. It is planned. It's something that we need to seek out. It should be our action. Love is not just something we say we are, or we say we do, or we say that God grants to us. We need to show that love to others as well. Whenever I was younger, it was just the three of us older siblings at the house, and my parents would go out on Friday and go shopping. It was their big shopping day, and that was back when you could leave a 6-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 10-year-old home alone, and the house wouldn't get burned down, or they knew what to do. And so anyway, we're there, and the last thing that they say before they go out is, you guys be nice to each other. So my older brother and I are only 13 months apart, same size, same build. We played with the same toys, and then we've got my 3-year younger brother that always wanted to do what we did anyways. So when they left, that be nice just kind of one ear and out the other. But the only part that held was, in our minds, in my mind, was that I just wasn't mean to my younger brother. So when it came time to get a snack, when it came time to watch something, play something, my older brother and I would go run and play. We'd go play with certain toys. We wouldn't invite my younger brother. If it was time to get a snack, we were taller, we could get something, we wouldn't check to see if he needed anything. We were being nice. I wasn't arguing with him. I wasn't hitting him. He wasn't bleeding. I mean, this is going very well. But that's often how we get in our own mindset. While we weren't doing those things that we attribute to being nice, is much different than not being bad. The next one here is, do what is good to those who hate you. So when the Bible says do what is good, that doesn't mean just don't hit them, just don't be mean to them. We actually have to purposefully do good. The world says return evil for evil. The world loves to talk about karma. Well, they're just going to get what they deserve. You just wait. I mean, you may hear somebody that tries to act like they're being nice, and they're saying, well, I'm not saying I want them to get run over by a car or anything. I don't want it to go that far, but if they happen to trip in a gopher hole and sprain their ankle, then I wouldn't necessarily be upset. Or if they angered a wasp nest while mowing and they swelled up like a balloon, also it wouldn't be the end of my day. If someone accidentally wrote that said person's name down on a timeshare presentation request, they probably had it coming. Doing good to someone is very different than not doing bad to them. One of the other famous, "You have heard I say," that Christ made, this statement was, "You have heard, love your neighbor and hate your enemy." That's what the world tells you. But I say, love your enemy, do good, lend. It's interesting, in verse 27 and 35 of Luke chapter 6, right after it says, do good to your enemy, it talks about giving them. Do good. This is after it talks about loving your enemy, it says do good. So love your enemy, do good. Later on in the chapter, it says love your enemy and give, not expecting anything in return. So there's an action not only implied with love your enemy, but also right afterwards, just to make sure that we get the point. Not expecting anything in return. It's really difficult to give someone anything, and it's been a week. If they borrow a tool, if they borrow something, it's been a week, 2 weeks, and it's not back, and now you're starting to wonder, am I going to get it back? Do I call them? When do I check? What condition is it going to be in when it comes back? Will it still work properly? Will I recognize it? These are some things that go through your mind, so it's really difficult for us to give without expecting anything in return. We've been helping quite a few families now so far with the disaster relief. One individual specifically that was helped said, you guys have blessed me and my family more than you will ever know. And this individual said, here's my name and here's my number. If someone comes up here and cannot get their furniture back to their house, cannot load it all up, give me a call. I will come and do it for them. Lo and behold, a few weeks later, we had someone show up. And this someone was already slightly irritated because there was a little bit of miscommunication. They thought their furniture was going to be ready a few weeks earlier. So there was already a little bit of frustration there. So this gentleman shows up, and in 10 minutes, he said, I'll be there in 10 minutes. We gave him a call, said we got somebody that needs help. He shows up with a truck and trailer. All they arrived with to pick up a plethora of boxes and mattresses and all that was an S10 Chevy pickup. So they definitely were not getting it all that day. So he shows up. We load him, help him get loaded. He loads his truck and trailer. He straps his truck and trailer down, then proceeds to strap their truck down. All the while, they never got out of their vehicle to help. This man still said, not a problem. And he delivered it. We thought, well, that's the last time we'll be able to call this guy. So then just this last week, we had someone else, a woman that came in, and she was distraught because I'm nowhere near ready to put the furniture in my house. My son's garage is open, but all he's got is a little truck. There's no way we can load this. We called that gentleman again. Answer the phone. Hey, we're with the Sand Springs Church of Christ, and we've got someone else here that needs your help. Without hesitating, he said, I can be there in 10 minutes. He shows up. She's ecstatic. She's overcome with emotion, glad that somebody's willing to help. He loads her up, gets her loaded down. She goes around, hugs for everybody. She's elated. She just can't believe it that there's still these nice people out there. And I talked to that man specifically, and I said, you're doing a lot of good. I really appreciate what you're doing. This woman, to see a complete change, she comes in just worried, distraught, and stressed, and she is so thankful and blessed by the time that he ends up leaving with her with the furniture. And the son was trying to help. They were trying to help. It was just a 180. He didn't let that first altercation stop him from doing good. We don't even know. He'd made comments before. We don't know if this man goes to church anywhere, if he claims to be a Christian or not. But he decided that loving his neighbor was more important than letting one bad instance ruin the way he would act towards all people in the future. Sometimes we can get that way, where we let one bad instance, I try to do good one time and look what it gave me, That's the last time I'm going to do that. But we are not responsible for their actions. God doesn't say that how they act is how we should act. God says we act because God acted. We have God's example, and that's the way that we should act. So you make the contact. You deliver the furniture. You greet. You shake someone's hand. You make the phone call, send the email. Be the bigger person. Because we aren't responsible for their actions towards us. We're responsible for our actions towards them. This morning, maybe you've got your own Judas. I think back to the night of the Lord's Supper when the disciples are with Christ. He went around and washed their feet. And he ate a meal with them. All the while knowing what the enemy was up to. All the while knowing what Judas would do. But by the time Judas was told, go quickly, do what you must, the disciples still questioned, who is the enemy? Who is going to betray him? So what that tells us is that Christ did not treat his enemy any different in washing his feet and eating a meal together with him. Maybe we've got a Judas. Maybe we've got an enemy. Maybe we need to have a meal with our enemy. Or maybe we need to start to pray for them. Pray for ourselves and how we treat them. Or maybe we're just like Stephen, and in their attacks, we should pray that we have the response, do not hold this sin against them. Even up to the point of the cross, Christ said, forgive them. They don't know what they were doing. So we, before coming to Christ, we are opposed to God. We are living in the world. We're living for the flesh. But while we were enemies and while we were sinners, Christ died for us. The invitation song this morning is Out of My Bondage. Maybe it's the bonds of the flesh that you're dealing with. You don't realize what they've done. I can't love my enemy. How could I possibly do that? We can be a slave to that mindset. If you need freedom from that, or if you need to put Christ on in baptism, would you come as we stand and sing?
Out of my bondage, sorrow and night, Jesus, I come.